what you put in, you get out. And really that was my thought around my career and ultimately how that led me to leading technology at Jetstar.
There's not much higher than a CTO really in a business when it comes to tech. So what did that journey look like?
When you start thinking about technology and how you can just solve problems with technology, you just become curious about that. I just kind of went, well, how do I learn more? What do I want to be curious about to learn more? And then how do I apply that with two elements, customer and technology or digital? It was really just about problem solving. And basically, I just took challenges that were right in front of me. And then so if someone saw that I did something, that might open up a door to something else. So if I maintained a curious mind, I would be able to kind of find different doors that I could ultimately open along that journey. Sometimes you think about some of those moments as just luck, but actually there is the hard work, the effort that you put in, and that creates things as well.
Catherine, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am very excited to have you on. For those of the audience that don't know who you are, could you just give a bit of a background into your story, your career journey, and where it all started from? So, Catherine, over to you.
Thank you, Georgie. And thank you for having me as well. So I am the former CTO, Chief Technology Officer from Jetstar Airways. I've worked in airlines my entire career, which is a little bit more than 25 years. And I started that career journey in the UK originally. Before almost traveling the world. There are still some places that I haven't seen or been to yet, but using work as a leverage point to adventure and travel and working for an airline was a great way of achieving that. And it was also a very exciting place to work because you're connecting people. And it's something that I fell in love with very early in my career and used that as something that propelled me throughout my journey.
Amazing. Okay. So what was your first job, in the airline industry?
My first job was in the call center at a brand new startup airline. They were probably the second low cost airline in Europe, called GoFly, which was part of British Airways. And I had just finished studying and I knew, that I basically just needed to send my resume out to, 1,000 different places to try and get a job. And I had two offers out of all of those kind of moments where I'd kind of set that out. And one was to work for a private jet company on board as your hostess, as a cabin crew. And the other one was to start up at a low-cost airline that was brand new and just kind of getting started, and it was the startup that filled my spirit with much more anticipation and fun and challenge. While the private jet would have taken me to many different places and meeting many different types of people, it was one of those kind of moments in your life where there were sliding doors, you could go one way or the other, and I chose the startup option.
Mm. Well, one thing I think working for a startup gives you is that sort of, have to think on your feet, you have to get involved in everything, you wear multiple hats and you learn so much quicker. That's been my experience anyway, from working for that sort of smaller company and that sort of fast paced startup. But what's really fascinating for me, and I'm sure the listeners are sort of tuning into this as well, is that a lot of people, when they think of, say, technology, so you worked your way up to be the CTO of Jetstar. Now, you said that you started in the call centers. So that's got me intrigued. So you didn't come from necessarily a techie background. I'm not sure if you went to university to study software engineering, but how did you then transition from working in the call centers to then slowly making your way, or maybe quickly making your way up into a position with Jetstar, such a well-known brand here in Australia, part of the Qantas group as well, for those maybe who are overseas, as everyone's heard of Qantas. But how did you get to that such... there's not much higher than a CTO really in a business when it comes to tech. So what did that journey look like?
Yeah, I And you're right, I didn't kind of grow up from a purist technical background. It was pure curiosity. I'm lucky enough that my dad was in IT, and so there was always that opportunity for that curiosity, just from an at-home perspective. So it was something I always had an interest in. The airline that I worked at was one of the first fully online airlines, and we're talking about 1997, so early, from that kind of early stage of how do you enable customers to book online. And so the crossover of digital and helping people through those moments and being in the contact center kind of gave me that curiosity and, you know, how do I help you? What do I need to learn to help you? So it kind of comes from a customer kind of led aspect, that how do you problem solve? And then when you start thinking about technology and how you can just solve problems with technology, you just kind of and become curious about that. That just grew. And really from a career path perspective, I just kind of went, well, how do I learn more? What do I want to be curious about to learn more? And then how do I apply that with two elements, customer and technology or digital, which you can kind of bundle into that same framework. So it didn't have to be this purist approach. It was really just about problem solving. And basically I just took challenges that were right in front of me. And then, so if someone saw that I did something, you know, that might open up a door to something else. So if I maintained a curious mind, I would be able to kind of find different doors that I could ultimately open along that journey. And I think you and I, when we first started talking about doing this podcast, you know, sometimes you think about some of those moments as just luck, and that, you know, you were there in the right time. But actually there is, you know, the hard work, the effort that you put in, and that creates things as well. You know, what you put in, you get out. And really that was my thought around my career and ultimately how that led me to leading technology at Jetstar.
Okay, there's a lot here. So this is really good. So there's a few things. I always try and listen to people because I always think that success leaves clues. I don't believe things just happen by chance, and I don't believe in luck. I believe that we create our own luck. Yes, of course, things like, for example, you grew up and your dad was in tech. Now, that was a little bit of luck, right? Because had you not maybe had that exposure to your dad working in technology, maybe you wouldn't have been as curious. So yes, there's some times that we look back and go, well, maybe that was a little bit of luck there. But you still, like you said, have to open those doors initially. You had to go through the door. One thing that you kept on saying was the word curiosity. And I think that when I've sort of recorded now a number of podcasts, this word keeps on coming up: curiosity, problem solving, and a very much of a growth mindset. I think these are sort of seems to be the traits of people that have gone on to do incredible things in their career. So in your opinion, from like reflecting back on your career, and I'd love to sort of go more into your role at Jetstar and how you really shaped that, but why is that curious mindset, especially now as the world is evolving so quickly, why in your opinion do you think that is so crucial when it comes to really getting ahead in your career and having success?
I think there is a lot of information out there. We're definitely in the information era where it's just, there is so much out there, and having a curious mind is not just about reading everything. It's about asking questions. It's about kind of, you know, asking the deeper questions of, well, why is that the case and what makes that happen and how do I use that as a pathway forward? So it is that curious but questioning, in order to be able to go a little bit deeper and to understand, so that you can kind of cut through, you know, the overwhelming amount of information that is out there. And I just, you know, I didn't love school, but I loved reading, and so therefore consuming information, listening to, you know, now we have podcasts, but, you know, video content and things like that, just consuming information, but asking myself the questions as I consume that. I just always had a passion for that growing up. And I think that really helped as I kind of grew into my career as well, because it's not like you start out like that. There are moments that allow you to grow and realize and know what works. And I learned pretty early that having that curiosity and asking questions was going to work. I would say, though, I didn't always ask the right questions in the right moments. And so I kind of always tell myself, always ask the question. It doesn't matter how uncomfortable you feel, because that's actually where the nugget of information is going to come out from.
Mm. Yeah, don't just sit there and wonder. Make sure you do ask the question and get help. That's another thing that I think a lot of people struggle with, is asking for help as well. I think we try to figure things out ourselves, and actually if we just ask for help, we would get to the solution a lot quicker. So I love the fact that you were always asking questions, that curious nature. But let's sort of move on now to your role at Jetstar. That is a huge role, and I was reading your resume earlier actually, and it was saying how you led through the pandemic, and I can imagine the chaos that unfolded during that time and how your problem solving skills really came into effect, because the world was changing. The airline industry pretty much shut down overnight. Couldn't fly anywhere. So what was that like? You know, you were sort of probably really achieving lots in your career as a CTO, and boom, sort of all of a sudden overnight, things were changing rapidly. It was probably going absolutely crazy. So can you explain that period and how you navigated that and what sort of the key lessons were through that period?
Yeah, and I think it's important to kind of say COVID impacted everybody in multiple different ways, but I think it was a huge learning opportunity as well. And so it's important, and I have done this over the kind of last couple of years, reflect on what were the things that kind of you had to do differently or think differently or achieve in a different way. And I think it's important to kind of hold onto those and have those reflection moments, because it was a very challenging time. And I kind of remember leading up to it, you know, everybody was talking about a VUCA world and and how you deal with the chaos and change. And no one knew what that would actually be when it really actually happened. And so you're not prepared for it. You can't be prepared for it. And so I think being present and being in the moment was really important at that time. Now, I was about 3 weeks into my CTO role at Jetstar when COVID happened. So you kind of go into taking on a very big role like that. With, you know, your 100-day plan, you've organized, you're kind of establishing what your goals are. And then everything kind of, you know, that goes out of the window and you have to pivot and you have to do something very differently. And so some of the key things up front were we were dealing with an entire workforce that couldn't do their job anymore. We were, you know, on the verge and then were grounded and couldn't fly apart from some small amount of flying. And so actually being human was probably the most important thing to, you know, ground myself in, to make sure that we weren't just tackling the problems that were in front of us, but also helping the humans kind of go through that very difficult time. And we had to cut back our workforce. We had to stop programs of work. We had to negotiate with suppliers. There were lots of things that we had to do, but ultimately there are always, you know, things that you have to do in the moment, and you try and do everything that you can do with the information that we had at the time. But ensuring that the human was considered in everything that we did. So caring, connectedness, communication, over communicating sometimes, just telling people what was going on. Sometimes telling people we don't know what's going on, but we're here. As well. And I think it made me into much more of a human leader. It kind of enabled me to take those vulnerable moments and actually use them to help people rather than kind of hold them back. Because sometimes you do hold that vulnerability back. And I think it actually created a space where we could be more vulnerable. You know, we invited people into our homes through technology, through putting Teams and Google and things like that in place really quickly. So there was this connectedness that was very different from what we were used to. And I think it actually is a benefit. I think it's nicer going forward that human, that empathy and that vulnerability can be seen and can be shown more.
Wow. Talking about reflection, I hope that you reflected back on that experience and hopefully are very proud of how you navigated that, because I'm sure a lot of people can look back during that time and wish that they'd had a different approach, but also it's always coming from that place of grace and understanding that we were thrown into a pretty tricky situation and no one knew how to navigate it. So I'm curious, Catherine, is that bit something that's naturally come to you, that sort of natural empathy, over-communication, vulnerability? These are all words that are now used a lot in leadership. Is that quite natural in your demeanor, or is that something that you have had to work on?
I think there is a natural element to it. I think you have to be true to yourself. So, you know, ultimately those things come through. But I think over time there has almost been this allowance to be more. And so as you learn from the leaders and the people that are around you ultimately. And when you've had a career spanning over 25 years, there are very different versions of that. But what it looked like 25 years ago versus what it looks like today is very different. And those things have an influence on you because those are the things that teach you how you need to show up. And so it pushes down some things that may naturally be there. But as we've kind of grown and over that journey, it gives you the opportunity to be more of who you are, be more of yourself, and show up as who you are in that. But I also have some things that I always make sure I do as well to help me do that. So I have a list of 50 words, like literally behind my desk, and I pick three whenever I'm going to do something a little bit tricky or something that I just feel like I need to think about. And they're verbs. They're words that kind of make me go, how am I going to show up today? What does that look like for me right now? And so before this, I wrote down courage, passion, and confidence. Those are the three words that are going to, you know, they're the ones sitting at the front of how I'm going to show up today. And so they're little reminders that not to be human, but to be how you are there for those people in the right moment as well. And those words change depending on those moments. And I found that helps as well. And that's not something someone taught me 25 years ago. I was taught that in November. I went and did a mindfulness course because I had the opportunity and the time to do it. And I was taught that. And I think it puts us in really good stead, but it gives a little bit of framework to help kind of navigate some of that as well.
I absolutely love that. And one thing that I do every morning is I do a meditation. In that meditation, it says, how do you want to show up today? What's the one word that would describe how you want to show up? How will you behave today? What the energy you're going to bring in? And I think if every single human being woke up and asked themselves that question, we would solve a lot of problems and perhaps we would be a bit more human to each other as well. But I think this is also the missing piece in leadership, is that human element, that vulnerability, that really taking responsibility for energy you're bringing in to your team, to your work environment. And if every single person showed up with that, I think we'd have really, really good workplaces. So it's just these little nuggets of gold that I hear on the podcast. And I hope people listening to this are really taking this away, because I just love that you pick three words and that's how you're going to show up on the podcast. It's just, yeah, absolute gold. But going back to the Jetstar piece as well, because I just think this is just so fascinating. So you literally were there, you had your 100-day plan, and then COVID hit and then everything changed overnight. What are you, apart from obviously your amazing empathetic leadership skills, but anything else in particular in that sort of career journey that you reflect on, you go, I was really proud of that moment when? Well, when you look back at your time at Jetstar, could you sort of pinpoint some key moments that you think, yeah, that was great what I did there?
Yeah. And COVID's definitely kind of sits quite front and center to that. Not because of COVID, but because of what we were able to achieve during COVID. Mm-hmm. So we, myself and my brand new team, and most of them were either brand new or I just kind of brought into roles as a leadership team into technology at Jetstar. We couldn't meet face to face, but we had to, as we were starting to come back and fly and rebuild and kind of, you know, move back to what we were, but a little bit different at the same time. We needed to find a very different way to engage the workforce, one through a virtual medium, but also through restrictions and, you know, not being able to meet in an office and, you know, find ways to collaborate and create vision without being able to sit there with your, you know, your design thinking sticky notes on a wall. You know, the environment was very different. And so my team and I were actually took a very different approach. We started creating our vision on a park bench because we had to, and it was the only place that we could meet at that point in time. So, you know, adaptability, how do you still create a vision? How do you create connection, but in a different framing? And so we created a vision at this park bench with paper flying everywhere, but, you know, it worked and it established something that our team could then connect to, which was about creating a business-led technology team that were there to solve problems for both our customers and for our employees. And if we weren't solving those problems, we weren't doing the justice that we needed to do to our organization and to the people that we worked with. And so we just put a real focus on those critical things that we needed to do. Now, some of those were, you know, big programs of work of cyber and cloud migration and things like that. But people, some people love the what is it, you know, great, I'm doing a program of moving all of this to cloud. Most people actually want connection to the problem you're trying to solve, that storytelling that sits behind it. And so we focused on what that storytelling was. How do we engage people in how we're going to solve those problems? Even people that don't understand what does it mean to move, you know, our environment to cloud, but kind of create those moments of storytelling that so that people can understand what does it mean for them? What does it mean for the technology team? But also what does it mean for the people that are receiving the benefit of these things but may not actually be able to tangibly tell what those benefits are?
I love that. And that word adaptability is absolutely key in this modern world. And I think that's going to be a trait that every single person needs to really continue to get ahead in their career. Just always be adaptable because this world is going to change at a very rapid pace. But you said something interesting then as well, because I think this is part of maybe not the problem, but certainly the conversations I'm having is that I'm very passionate about technology. I've been recruiting it now for 10 years. And over those 10 years, I've seen the lack of diversity when it comes to tech. And I would love to see more females coming in. But I think part of the problem is that we don't maybe associate flying and going on holiday and Jetstar airline with tech, you know, and every single thing that we interact with every single day has got a technical component to it. And what I want to do is educate people to say, well, if you're really, if you get on a flight, for example, and you don't like something, it's often the technology and everything that goes on behind the scenes that can change that. And like you said, that curious nature, that problem solving ability got you interested in technology in the first place. So I'd love to know your thoughts and views on, like, why do you think technology, one, is a really good career choice, and in particular for women and young girls?
My belief is this word technology is kind of a bit of a misnomer. It's confusing for people because it is so many different things today. You know, you can be a creative in technology. You can be a doer. You can be, you know, you can be the person that sits there with, you know, hands on keyboards. You can be, you can storytell through data. There are just so many different variations of what technology is. And this one kind of banner that sits above it kind of makes people kind of, it feels unattainable. But actually, when you peel it back, and I think that curiosity of unpacking something is really important in that moment, because you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have a computer science degree to be great at technology. There are very different variations of what that can look like. And there are so many different types of roles, and especially as you kind of step into digital roles and things like that, where it is problem solving, thinking about the customer, using design thinking and elements through that, you're still solving a problem with technology. You're just, you know, you're using your skill sets in a different way to do it. So it is broad and very varied. At Jetstar, we created a couple of different intern programs that actually enabled us. We worked with the Victorian government to bring in reskilled people during COVID who went and learnt a new skill. You know, they might have done a cyber course, they might have done a data analytics course, they might have just done a project management course, and bring those into the organization so that they could see that the skills that they've learned can be applied in many different ways. I think it's almost easier to apply in the service type of industry because you can see the outcome quite clearly. But it doesn't mean that a role in a technology company is out of the question. You just got to work out what are the capabilities and the skills that you bring to that. But I think we have a really big problem from an education perspective. And I think the dropouts in university is still quite high. And are we doing enough to stem those kind of dropout points? I don't know. I think having STEM in school today helps, and it does create that curiosity. You know, my daughter did robotics when she was in kinder. So, you know, there's these moments that we're allowing our kids to see how technology can kind of play a role and how they might be able to convert that into a job later on. But my daughter even today doesn't know how to articulate what she will be when she grows older as well. So we've put a lot of pressure on it. So I kind of think you need to kind of keep it pretty broad and open as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I certainly don't have the answer to it, but I think that it's just exposing children to as much as possible and being very aware of what you're giving girls and boys to sort of play with and interact with as well. I think that all plays a part in our programming. I'm always very, you know, when I sort of walk into a toy shop to buy my friends' kids some toys, whatever, I'll try and always get something quite neutral, not something pink and fluffy or blue if it's a boy. Like I try and always think, no, I want to just make sure that their minds are expanded and there's no limitations in their thinking, or that's a male role, that's a female role. And when I reflect on my own childhood, obviously technology was, well, wasn't even a thing really, but it was starting, you know, we had a computer in our house, but I never really associated technology with a career choice. It was beauty, nursing, something in healthcare, teacher. That was kind of very much pushed my way as a female. And I know, but look, thankfully times have changed a lot, but I want to make sure with all of the jobs coming in the future that we do need to accelerate this a little bit. And I just want to make sure that young girls and women don't get left behind, because I also think we've got this pool of incredible untapped talent of women in their 40s and 50s that have had their families and are coming back into the workforce, and they're thinking, what now? What's next for me? So actually, I'd love to ask you, Catherine, like, for those, if a woman is listening to this, or a man, or anyone in the world who wants to maybe career pivot, any advice on how to get into technology if they don't come from a tech background like you didn't? Obviously, you were interested in aviation, you were doing call center work. What advice would you have for people wanting to transition and pivot and come into tech? Where would you sort of recommend them to get started?
Well, I think intern programs are really good. I think they give a really good opportunity to learn. And I don't think you have to do intern programs in the same way as we see, you know, you've just graduated from university and it follows your career path, and I think seek out different and alternative internship programs. And I think organizations need to create and work with different organizations to create different pathways in to technology type of roles as well. So that, you know, it's not just the typical I studied, therefore I am. Because I think it's really important that you don't, you know, study is important, but so is the experience that you gain on the job. And if I'm looking at a resume, I'm not just looking for the university degrees and the education that you have. I'm looking for how you've applied that, where you've applied that, and those, and how much those roles and skills are transferable as well. Because I think you can't have a closed mindset to it. We have to be quite broad in terms of our thinking. You know, we had one person that joined the team at Jetstar, and she'd been an EA for the last 20 years of her career. And she came into the technology team, and she was a breath of fresh air. And that diversity is really important, because it does bring a different way of thinking, a different way of problem solving. And it brings maturity into the team as well. And I think it's important, but we kind of have to change the system a little bit on both sides.
100%. And I'm curious as well, obviously being a female in tech, what sort of experience have you had? Have you sort of had to navigate a few tricky scenarios, or has it been quite smooth sailing throughout your career?
I wouldn't say it's been smooth sailing, but I also don't label myself as a technology person. Okay. I step into roles to problem solve, and I might use technology as my tools to problem solve. And so I probably don't put the same construct around it. And because I don't put the same construct, I don't necessarily see the same challenges that other people potentially have. To be honest, I didn't, you know, if I look back on my career, I didn't expect to be a CTO. It wasn't necessarily on my career journey. While technology was always part of how I might have kind of gone in and solved problems, you know, I've done that through digital work. I've done that through data. I've done that in an operational sense as well. But I probably didn't kind of have this label. And maybe it's the labels that kind of push us in little boxes, and that helped.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. That's really powerful. I actually did a post on LinkedIn the other day about your job versus your identity. And I do think a lot of people identify with their job, and therefore, like you say, they put themselves in a box and they go, this is my job, this is who I am. And you're a human being, you're multidimensional, you're not just one thing, and we are constantly ever evolving. And if we're not constantly evolving and growing, then we're stagnating, and anything that stagnates eventually goes on to die. So that in itself is so important for people to learn and understand this constant growth and constant what's next. And like you say, that curious nature that you've always had, it fascinates me, because like I said, I'm always looking for patterns, I'm always looking for clues, and I always want people to listen and really listen to what's being said and what stories are being told. But on that note as well, you mentioned the word reflection. I always love to reflect as well. And if you could go back and be a mentor — I talk a lot about mentors on this podcast — but if you could mentor younger Catherine, what advice would you have for her as she's navigating her career, getting into technology, working her way up to be the CTO of Jetstar? Any moments where you'd really have liked to step in with the wiser head and go, don't do this, or good job, or what would you say to her?
Well, I think if I take a philosophical nature behind it, I think the journey is important. And so just keep going and just keep learning and keep growing. And so therefore, I wouldn't want to step in necessarily and go, you know, here's a nugget of information that's going to help you, because I wouldn't have asked the right questions, or I wouldn't have kind of been curious. And so I do kind of take a little bit of philosophical kind of approach on it and kind of go, well, there's probably, I think the journey was important, and there's not moments where I would have felt like I had to, you know, when I look back and kind of go step in, because you might have changed the journey and somewhat, or perhaps. But from a practical perspective, you know, just kind of keeping those tenets of be curious, ask questions, learn, grow, be confident when you're not even feeling confident. You know, stand up for when you think something is right, but also stand up for when you don't think something is going, you know, which isn't right. You know, it's those, what you said before, it's the identity, it's those things that kind of make up who we are. Those are the things that I would mentor on, not, you know, you should have done this, or you should have done it a different way, or, you know, no one told me to move to Australia. I just, you know, found myself here. And if, you know, my younger self had the kind of knowledge that one day I'd live in Australia, maybe I would have done it differently. Maybe I would have, you know, moved here, and instead of having a job, I moved here when I was consulting. I wasn't supposed to be here for very long, but I allowed that journey to kind of evolve and be what it was, you know. But if I knew what it was going to be, would I have made those same kind of steps? Would I have opened myself up to, you know, being outside of my comfort zone and allowing what might have happened. So the other practical thing I probably would say is just, you know, sometimes get out of your comfort zone, because it's your comfort zone that holds you back. So sometimes you kind of have to put yourself out there.
I absolutely love that. And I was one of the films I love is The Butterfly Effect, and how just one thing can change your whole path in life. And I also think as well that it's really easy to look back and reflect on things and think, oh, if I had done that differently, then maybe that would have been better. But we always do this. We always look back at the things that we didn't do with rose-tinted spectacles. But maybe what we don't reflect on enough is, well, actually, how could that have turned out the other way and gone terribly wrong and left me down a completely different path? I think sometimes it's like we can't split test life. And I heard a quote the other day, like in life, we have to choose our regrets. And sometimes I think to myself, because I'm from the UK as well, and sometimes I'll really miss my family. And I moved out to Australia 12 years ago. And sometimes I think, what would life have been like had I stayed in the UK? And sometimes I'll catch myself maybe romanticizing about that idea. But I notice that I'm thinking about all the things that could have gone really well and how positive it could have been. And what I'm not doing is going, well, if you stayed in the UK, actually, maybe this could have happened as well. I think it's really important to be aware of that. And I also think that life is happening for us as well, when we are sent things to sometimes challenge us, but to also help us evolve as human beings as well. And I definitely think that from your journey, it sounds quite similar in a lot of ways to my own journey as well, like travel, moving to the other side of the world. And I think that what you just said then as well is really powerful about getting outside your comfort zone. I think that that is absolutely key. And if I reflect on my own sort of career, it's been the times where I've done the hard thing that I've gone on to build more confidence, and clarity's come from that, which I guess leads me quite beautifully onto my next question, which is, I did call this podcast Career Confidence for a reason. And I do think that confidence is a lot of the foundation that everything else is built upon, the belief in yourself, the trust in yourself. How have you gone about building your own career confidence? Were you confident as a kid? Is it something that sort of come quite naturally to you? Did you grow up in quite a loving household that really nurtured you as a kid? Like, where's that come from? Because you come across as such a very confident and very sure of herself female, which is incredible. So where did that come from?
I think one of the things you said before is that trust in self, and actually confidence is more of a trust thing. And for me, it is about how I show up. And, you know, sometimes on the inside I could be, you know, I might be scared, but, you know, I do tell myself, well, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I show up and I'm there, and, you know, it's not going to be bad. And so therefore I've always kind of erred on showing up. And I don't want to say it's, you know, just confidence, because it's a word that means many things to many different people, but it's about being there. It's about showing up. It's about having cheerleaders. It's about having the people around you that sponsor you and support you, and the people that kind of go, well, that was a bit of a bad moment, but, you know, these are all the great things that kind of came out of it, and kind of just give you those reality checks, but not in a negative way, in a really positive way. I was, if you ask my brother, he would say I was bossy. I own that word now, because you know, I think kids, you know, certainly in our generation, where, you know, bossy was a bad thing. I don't think bossy is a bad thing. I think that's about asking for what you want and when you want it, and just being there. And so I probably was more confident, but with this whole imposter syndrome that kind of sits behind it, where you kind of go, I'm not ready for this, and I'm not the right person to do this. So, you know, we've always kind of got those two sides of us, and it's about which one wins and which one is going to show up. And so I think by having that kind of guidance of, you know, how am I showing up today, just means that I can kind of, you know, chest up, shoulders back, I'm here. And so I do come across as that really confident person. I also, I had a grandmother who worked her whole life, grew up during the war, who didn't get things because of the generation that she was in, couldn't get a mortgage, couldn't, you know, there were things that she, you know, had held against her because of the generation that she grew up in. And so I kind of refused to let those things hold me back. And so if I can buck the system, do something different, challenge something, then I'm going to do it, because I think we have to for the people that didn't have it. And I think we have to for the people in front of us as well.
So powerful. And you're absolutely right. We as females now have a lot more options. And I agree with you. Bossy was a word that got thrown around a lot in my household. Or you're very assertive, you know, very, but like you say, it's like, I've always known what I wanted. And the other piece to it as well is that I have always had that sense of love for myself, and just to make sure that I'm checking in with myself, is this right for me? And again, I think that our society would say, oh, that's selfish if you put yourself first. And I would always argue back on that and say, well, what's the alternative? That you push yourself back down to the bottom of the barrel and then you've got nothing left for anybody else. And I think that's absolutely key. And there's actually so many more questions I could ask you, Catherine, but I am conscious of time. But when, as we're sort of touching upon that piece now about the whole sort of self-care, how, when you're sort of navigating, you've gone through some really tough challenges in your career, how important in those moments, and you've got a family as well, so it'd be really easy for you just to neglect yourself and not work on yourself and not learn and not grow and just show up every day in pure survival. How have you gone about making sure that you are always ensuring that you are looking after yourself and taking care of yourself?
I create time for it. Even at the most busiest of times, whether that's COVID or it's, you know, traveling for work and things like that, I always make sure I have my schedule and I know how I am taking care of myself. And I think that requires partnership at home. It requires, you know, knowing what that needs to look like for me and knowing what that needs to look like for my husband and for my daughter as well. Instilling that self-care for her is as important. She goes to the gym with my husband and I. Like, there are moments where, you know, it could be really easy to kind of go, I don't have time to go to the gym. I don't have, you know, I've got to look after my child. I've always taken her to the gym with me when I've had to, if my husband can't look after her. And that requires that partnership and the, you know, and having the schedule and the appointments to make sure that we're still doing it. But also sometimes just taking a little bit of time out for ourselves. So I'm currently on a bit of a break. And I've been intentional during that break to think about who I am, what do I want to do, what my identity is. And I'm not going to lie, I've had moments of identity crisis whilst taking a break, to kind of go, well, you know, what am I if I don't have a job? What am I if I'm not at work? And what does that mean? And I've had to really intentionally take some real self-care moments. So I went to the US back in October to go and listen to some great speakers, just so I could kind of consume some really good uplifting information. You know, I got the opportunity to see Michelle Obama. Wow. Yeah, I made sure that was something that was important for me personally. It will help from a career perspective as well, but how do I kind of find those moments of self-development inside that self-care? I did a mindfulness course. It's about carving out time for yourself and not feeling guilty about it, because our environment can make us feel guilty, but actually the person that applies the guilt is yourself typically. And so not listening to that basically, and kind of go, well, you know, I'm not going to feel guilty about this. I am going to go to a Pilates class. I am going to, whatever it is that fulfills your life. Yeah, I refuse to feel guilty. But I do it through partnership with my husband so that we both can make time for ourselves.
Mm. Oh, that is so powerful. And it's so true, isn't it? I had something Janine Ellis said on the podcast that really stuck with me. She said, guilt doesn't serve you. And it's so easy to just put guilt on things if we have a moment where we're like, I just need to go and do this for me. But then if you're in the Pilates class feeling bad, then you should never have done the Pilates class, because all the benefits from that class has gone out the window. So you need, I think, as especially as females, when we've got multiple people relying on us, and especially like the mums out there, guilt doesn't serve us, and we really need to release and let that go. But look, I think, well, thank you also for sharing that. That was a really beautiful moment when you said about what's next to me and having that sort of like identity crisis, because we've all been through that, because we tie so much of our sense of worth and self into what we do. And when we step away from our work, it's like, well, who am I without this job, without this title? So I would love, if you don't mind sharing, like, obviously you mentioned you went to America, you did some seminars, you've done a mindfulness course, which is all fantastic things, and I would do exactly the same. In those moments where you do experience those sort of moments of doubt and things, how do you navigate out of that? Because I can imagine there'd be so many people listening to this right now that perhaps have lost their job and are feeling that little bit of like, what is next to me, and feel a little bit lost and stuck. How are you navigating and keeping yourself mentally strong each day?
Yeah. You got to work at it. And that's where your cheerleaders come in. I have coffee with the people that lift me up. And my husband is included in that as well. You know, he'll get home from work and he's like, what did you do today? I did my to-do list by 10 o'clock in the morning. I've got, yeah, I don't know what else I'm going to do. And yeah, he will lift me up. He will kind of go, but you've got this, and you know who you are, and you know what you're great at. And keep focusing on those things, and just, you know, keep putting yourself out there and just making sure you do that. But my cheerleaders are those people that really help kind of just lift me back up when I'm having those identity crises. But also I'm very good at kind of going, okay, you sat there for the last 20 minutes, half an hour, put it away. What are you going to do? And so that being very action orientated helps me to kind of go, all right, that's enough. Mm-hmm. Move on.
Well, I'm going to be a bit of a cheerleader for you now as well, because I think that what you've done of coming on the podcast today is incredible, because that again is pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. This is all going to help you build your personal brand, which is what I talk about a lot. And I have got no doubt that very, very soon you will find the right opportunity for you. And I think taking the time to really pause and not just jump on the next thing that comes along into your inbox is really, really smart, because so many people I've seen over the 10 years of recruiting go from one job to another job to another job to another job, and they wake up one day and go, oh, I don't feel like my life's my own, and what have I achieved, and where's, I've got no purpose and no meaning. So I love the fact that you're taking this time for you to work on a few things and discover what is next for me. But yeah, I'm cheerleading you by saying that, because I think it's really inspiring, and so many people would just get themselves into a rut and sit around all day and feel sorry for themselves, and ultimately that's not taking responsibility, and if you play the victim, then you're going to get yourself into that negative spiral, which is so easy to do. And if you are in that space right now, keep on listening to podcasts, keep on growing, keep on learning, and you will eventually help get yourself out of that. But look, in terms of, I guess, you know, final question would be, obviously we are in this ever evolving, fast paced world. What are you sort of doing to make sure that you keep up to date? You're in technology now with AI, Web3, all the sort of new language that's coming our way. Do you read, listen to podcasts? Like, how are you sort of making sure that you're keeping ahead with, you know, all of the change that's happening in tech at the minute?
Yeah, I read podcasts. You know, I subscribe to multiple different kind of things that kind of give you more information. I am the kind of person that is, I don't like tech when it's trying to find a problem to solve. I like when there is a problem and then you apply technology to it. And so I'm not necessarily the kind of person that's kind of go, what is blockchain doing right now? Because, you know, I would rather see something in reality, in kind of the real world, and that would then kind of mean I would kind of go, I want to find more information out about this. I'm doing some advisory work at the moment, and one of the guys I'm working with, every time we write up a report, he puts it into ChatGPT and it spits out the report in a, you know, in a, for some reason, much more readable format than what we can.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think testing and trying different things as well, but in the real world, like I'm not an innovator in the sense of I don't like vaporware. I'm much more like that practical, tangible thing. So if I can kind of read something that is real, it's going to entice me. It's going to encourage me. I'm going to want to go deeper on it. But reading, consuming, talking to people as well is really important. Just that how the benefit of your network and how that can kind of grow your thinking and your thoughts around what's new, what's it doing, what does it look like, how does it apply. I think those are important questions to ask. And it's your network that are actually really important in that space.
Completely agree. Catherine, it's been so good having you on the podcast today. I'm really excited to watch your career continue to flourish, and I can't wait to see where you end up next. And any organization would be very lucky to have you, because I think you bring such a beautiful energy, and your background, your skills, your knowledge, everything about you is just, yeah, top class. So for those that want to connect, learn more about you, follow you, where can I send them? Where do you hang out the most?
Where do I hang out the most?
Don't give your home address.
yeah, not my home address, absolutely. Catherine, spelt C-A-T-H-R-Y-N, makes me very much more findable. It has meant that I have had to spell my name my entire life, but there is a benefit from that. When you look me up, Catherine Arnold, there's not many of us with that spelling. People can find me on LinkedIn and things like that. But
perfect.
Yeah.
We'll put the links in the show notes. So make sure you go and connect with Catherine after this podcast today. But thank you so much for coming on, and can't wait to see what we do next.
Excellent. Thank you, Georgie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.